Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike, and John is taking some much-needed shore leave this week, but have no fear. Stepping into the other chair here is Marcelo from the Talk Film Society. How's it going, Marcelo?
Hello, Mike, and hello, everybody listening. I'm sorry I'm here, and thanks for having me.
No, we're glad you're here because, you know, obviously with this being a Star Trek show, we talk to a lot of people on the network, a lot of people who are, you know, Star Trek fans and everything. And I always love the opportunity to bring someone in from, you know, my film podcast world and not my Star Trek podcast world. You know what I mean? It's like a different perspective, and I think that it's good and cool and all that good stuff.
Yeah, and that's not to say I don't love Star Trek. I love Star Trek. I'm just not as in love with it as someone like you, Mike.
Right. The thing which I keep on telling people, it blows my mind, and yet I respect on a sort of like a deep level, is the idea that, okay, you love Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
Probably, I mean, as much, if not more, than even most Trekkies, right?
Yes. It's in my top five of all time, I think, at this point.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, it's nowhere near my top five of all time, and I love the movie passionately. But yes, top five of all time, right? Okay, and yet, when did you watch Star Trek III, The Search for Spock?
I think I watched it for one of your shows, right, Mike? And that was maybe a year or two ago.
I don't think you watched it for one of my shows. I think you watched it because I was like, how have you not seen Star Trek III?
Yeah.
And I don't even particularly like Star Trek III, you know? That's an overstatement. But, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm just like, how? Because he thinks this is one of the five best movies ever made, and it ends with Spock dying, and you know that there's a sequel called The Search for Spock, and you're never like, I wonder how they got out of that mess. You're just like, nope, this is it. This is good. This is the perfect ending. I'm done.
I think I bought the set, and I sat down and watched them all because I think, yeah, you berated me on one of your shows saying, why haven't you seen the rest of these? And yes, I sat down, I watched them. Yes, at that point I had not seen 3, 4, 5, or 6, and I did see them. And yeah, I'm a big fan of 4 and 5, and no, not 5,
no,
6.
I was going
to
say, what?
No, not 5. 5 is the one where Kirk punches God, right?
Yeah,
okay,
basically.
Yeah, that was insane. So, you know, 6 I very much like. But yeah, I mean, to answer your question about, it's not that I didn't care about the return of Spock, it's just that I was so content with the story they told in Wrath of Khan that I wanted to live with that memory. It's like, oh, it had a perfect ending. And, you know, I did hear bad things about Part 3, so maybe I wasn't too eager to see how this story continued. But hey, I still love Wrath of Khan. Like I said, top 5 of all time, and I appreciate the rest. I may not love them, but I appreciate them.
Yeah, it's really interesting and really kind of cool. I mean, it speaks to your character, I have to say.
if I have a character, yeah.
but yeah, I mean, that's cool, and I love getting sort of like that perspective. And this week we, you know, have the opportunity to get that perspective because we're not talking about something Star Trek so much as something non-Star Trek, which is the new film Hell or High Water, which was just released, which stars Star Trek's Chris Pine, and was written by a guy named Taylor Sheridan, who appears on an episode of Enterprise. And we're going to be talking about that movie, along with the movie which is supposedly the first part in a trilogy that Hell or High Water is the second part in, Sicario, which was also written by Taylor Sheridan. So we're going to be talking about those two movies in a few minutes. But first, some news, semi-interesting news, which came out in the past week or so. Nicholas Meyer, your boy, the writer, director of Wrath of Khan, who is also now working on the new show, Star Trek Discovery. He is going to be attending the Star Trek convention in New York, which is happening, I guess it would be next weekend from when this is dropping, you know, Labor Day weekend. And at that convention, he is going to be showing Wrath of Khan in 4K, you know, I guess for the first time ever, and doing a Q&A afterwards, the director's cut, up on the big screen. And then he is also going to be on a panel with his Disco co-writer, Kirsten Beyer, who, of course, has written all of the Voyager Season 8 novels, if you want to refer to them that way. And the two of them are going to be talking about working on the new show, which is very, very interesting news and cool news, and I'm supremely jealous since I just went to the convention in Vegas, which had absolutely zero info or anything on the new show whatsoever, which is absolutely ridiculous, but what can you do? So, I mean, I'm thinking that we're not really going to be getting any new information out of them since Brian Fuller isn't there and stuff like that, but I'm very interested in this panel because it really speaks to what we're doing on this show, which is talking about, I think, more than anything, process, you know? I imagine that Meyer and Beyer are not going to be authorized to be like, oh yeah, we're doing this and that and that, and this is who we cast. But they're going to be like, hey, we wrote for Star Trek movies and Star Trek books, and now we're writing for this thing, and it's a weird, different experience, and here's, you know, what that experience has been like. And that, to me, I think is ultimately more interesting than finding out who's going to be starring in this new show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm very much interested in the new show, Mike. I mean, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Brian Fuller, as you mentioned. I love Hannibal, and I'm eager to see what Fuller and Company can do with Star Trek Discovery, is it? Yeah. Are people abbreviating it STD online? I hope not.
Some people are abbreviating it STD, like Rod Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's son, who's a producer on the show. Like he said, we hope that everyone catches STD in January, and we hope that it goes viral. But for the most part, I mean, I like, because everyone's like, oh, STD, you know, but Brian Fuller, you know, when confronted with the issue of abbreviation, I think had the absolute best response, and this is the one that I've adopted. He's like, the abbreviation is not STD, the abbreviation is Star Trek Disco.
Okay, like, yeah. See, that's why I love the man. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. Now, I've only seen the first episode of Hannibal, and I liked it quite a bit. But, I mean, like, just from reading your tweets and everything, I get the impression that there's probably no one who loves Hannibal as much as you do.
Maybe I online. Diego Crespo at Dego Waffles. He's a huge fan. Actually, long story short, like I was just on a podcast where I was like, "Hey, I can talk about Hannibal if you want." And then the guy running the podcast is like, "Well, Diego already has grabbed Hannibal, so too bad." I go, "Oh, okay." So he may be in contention for biggest Hannibal fan online, but yeah, I love the show. I maintain it's my favorite show. Hannibal is of the last perhaps 10 years. Better than Breaking Bad, better than Lost. Hannibal is it for me. Fuller comes at the material like you wouldn't expect. He adapts it in the most inventive way. He pays homage to even stuff like Manhunter, which you wouldn't expect him to homage. But yeah, you can just tell by watching the series, if you read the book, and I have read the book, and I do love the book, Hannibal. He comes at, oh, not Hannibal, sorry, Red Dragon is what it's based off of. Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter going at it. That's the premise of Red Dragon, which Fuller adapted into Hannibal. And yeah, if you love the book, you will get a lot out of this series, because yes, he adapts it in his own certain way, like I said. And you can just tell by watching the show that he loves the source material. You get that sense. He respects these characters. He knows what moves they should make when they veer off the source material. And it's a living tribute to the work and all. So having said all that, I can't wait for Fuller to take that mentality and take it to Star Trek. What will he do with somebody like Meyer and Beyer helping out writing? And are they going to help write the episodes, Mike?
Yeah, they're on the writing staff along with a very, very long list of writers. There's actually like 9 writers on the show, but he's got people who worked with him on Pushing Daisies. He's got a lot of people who worked with him on Heroes. And then a few other like very, very intriguing choices, like this guy Kemp Powers, who is a playwright, and a few other people here and there. Joe Manosky, who was a big writer in Star Trek on both Next Generation and Voyager, is kind of known for doing really, really weird, crazy, outside of the box, like high concept ideas. And Fuller worked with him back on Voyager, so it's a very diverse writing staff in terms of their backgrounds and their histories and everything, and it's quite a team which he's assembled, I have to say.
Yeah, and just hearing the news that Nicholas Meyer would be writing on the show, I'm gonna say it now, I'm betting there'll be a Wrath of Khan reference or homage in the series somewhere, somehow, visually, or there'll be a plot point that'll reference it. I'm sure he will tack that in an apt way.
You know, that could be, but I think if that happens, it would come from someone else. Because I have a feeling that everyone on the staff is like, you know, us, where they're like, Wrath of Khan is the most amazing thing. And meanwhile, Nicholas Meyer is like, come on, guys. Let's get back to work. Let's be serious here, you know. Let's make Wrath of Khan for the Next Generation, which means not doing Wrath of Khan again. You know what I mean?
No, yeah, yeah. It won't be like a beat-for-beat remake. Of course, he won't do that. But there'd just be like some aspect of it that'll ring in visually. Because I'll say this about Hannibal. Just visually, it's quite striking. I don't think he'll bring that visual style to Star Trek. I don't know if he possibly can, because it's a different show. I mean, Hannibal is its own beast. It's all about the gothic. It's all about the visceral nature of the characters he's dealing with. So Star Trek is different thing altogether.
That's true. Although I imagine this thing will look interesting. They said that the supervising director, you know, the producing director, is going to be Vincenzo Natali, the guy who did Splice and Cube.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he's actually worked on Hannibal a bit too, but he's done like a lot of TV shows, you know. So, yeah. So it'll look strange for sure. I imagine, but it's going to be an exciting thing to see. But yeah, I mean, he definitely does have a feel for source material. It seems like, you know, from what people are saying with Hannibal and, you know, all that stuff. So it'll be exciting to see. So the idea of Fuller and Meyer in a room together. You're down with that. You're going to be watching Disco when it comes out.
I'm sure Fuller is as giddy now working with Meyer as I am thinking of the prospect of Meyer and Fuller working together. I'll say that.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. Oh, it'll be exciting, and you know, hopefully, some people will be, you know, live tweeting in the room, you know, next weekend, and we'll be able to get some info about, you know, what is going on in that room from Meyer and Beyer. It should be cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, should we move on to our feature presentation?
Shall we?
All right. So Taylor Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan is a guy who is primarily known for his work as an actor. He's never been, you know, like the big star of anything, but he's a character actor who has appeared in tons and tons of television shows. From what I understand, he had a fairly large role on Sons of Anarchy. He had a run on Veronica Mars. He's appeared on CSI, NYPD Blue, you know, anything, you know, you name it, he was on it. And he was also in an episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Chosen Realm, which was from season 3 when they were in the middle of their, you know, Zindi arc. And this is the episode with, like, the guys who worship the spheres, and they basically are in the middle of a religious war, and they're doing, like, suicide bombings and stuff. And, like, a lot of people are like, well, this is the the 24 episode of Enterprise for sure, you know, which makes sense because the guy who was really kind of he wasn't the showrunner during season three, but he sort of like made his mark in season three was Manny Coto, who would go on to run 24, you know, after Enterprise ended. But, you know, Sheridan appeared in that episode. He was perfectly fine in it. It was kind of a dumb episode, but, you know, whatever. But it seems like from interviews that I've read that he kind of felt like he was in sort of a creative rut as an actor. You know, he was very good at his job and he was making a living off of it, but he wasn't sort of like creatively satisfied. And he decided to try his hand at writing a script. And the script that he wrote was Sicario. And it eventually got out there and, you know, got picked up by Lionsgate and turned into a movie directed by, I've never heard this guy's name pronounced. I'm sure I'm going to mess up. Is it Denis Villeneuve?
Not close enough.
Okay. All right. Who had made a movie called Prisoner. Did you see Prisoners?
Yes, yes. I like Prisoners. I loved Enemy a lot more.
Oh, what was Enemy? I don't even know about that
one. I'm pretty sure Enemy. That's the one with Jake Gyllenhaal. And Jake Gyllenhaal, he runs into somebody who looks like him, like himself, Gyllenhaal. And, yeah, they trade lives, and it's just a messed up movie. Things really take a turn for the weird after that. Yeah, okay. Enemy is worth... yeah, according to this thing, Enemy and Prisoners came out in the same year, so he had quite a year.
Yeah, not too bad. And then just a couple years later, he came out with Sicario, which is the first thing that I saw. Now, Sicario is a movie. It stars Emily Blunt, and she's like a local police officer who's in it's Arizona, right? I think. And basically, like, she's kind of made a name for herself as you know, leading these raids where they're, you know, like busting down doors of drug dealers and stuff like that, and really sort of like getting things done. And she catches the attention of Josh Brolin, who's the head of a task force, like a multi-agency task force, which they've assembled in order to try to take down like a big like drug lord, you know, who's you know, bringing drugs in to the country from Mexico. And Emily Blunt doesn't really know why she's involved with this thing or why they want her or who they are. She doesn't even know who this guy works for. There's a lot of like shady people who are, you know, kind of associated with this group. Like Benicio del Toro is there, and she has no idea who he is. And there's like a lot of questions going on, but at the same time, there's this prospect that she can really kind of like make a difference and start doing some real good, you know, like on a much larger scale than she was doing, you know, at the start of the film. And it really calls into question, like, what is good? What is bad? What is, you know, are, you know, some wrongs, you know, worthy in order to make other things right, and who's motivated by what, and what deals are we making? It's very, very complex, but also, in my opinion, rather awesome. Do you agree?
I completely agree, Mike. It's all about atmosphere for me in Sicario. Denis Villeneuve, however you pronounce that name, he's all about the atmosphere, especially when he works with somebody like Roger Deakins. Yes. As cinematographer, because Deakins' work in this is incredible. The score is powerful and helps build that atmosphere, because it's just all like coming down on Emily Blunt's character, like what is happening above her in terms of like what Brolin and Benicio del Toro are up to, like all this corruption, all these machinations of like surrounding her. This deal, she has no idea what's happening. She doesn't know what's going on, and yeah, Denis really builds that around her, like through his direction and through the visuals. Yeah, it's as close to something on the level of like No Country for Old Men, you know, and I don't say that too often, where a movie comes at you and has that darkness and represents a certain part of America in a certain way. Because this, Arizona, the desert, the kind of old West feel at times, it captures that so well. And the bleakness of this corrupt world, it captures it so well, like No Country for Old Men does. So yeah, it's up there for me. It's a movie that I'm surprised that a lot of people that aren't really into film are into. It was kind of a surprise hit, because I knew somebody who really did not know about movies, you know, as much as I did, for sure. Like, they're recommending it to people, Sicario. So I don't want to call them normies, but people who are casual film lovers, they're into Sicario too, which is surprising. So yeah, I'm happy it's gotten the acclaim and the attention it deserves.
Yeah, you know, I love this movie a lot too. It's, you know, when I first saw it, I think what you're saying about the atmosphere, like that really is sort of like the first thing which strikes you, and it really sort of like, you know, really gets into your head. I mean, like the very first shot of this movie, you see like a sort of like a nice, you know, sort of like suburban community, you know, and it's like, oh, look at that, you know, the suburbs. And then, you know, you cut into frame with a bunch of, you know, like SWAT team members with like guns and full body armor who are basically walking into this, you know, into this world. And it's like, whoa. And like with the music and everything, I mean, you're right, it's fantastic. The music was nominated for an Oscar, as it very well should have been. And so was Deakins' cinematography, which is fantastic. It is so like, crisp, I think is the word that I would use. Yeah. You know, Deakins, he's a cinematographer who has worked on a million things, including like all of the Coen brother movies, like No Country for Old Men, right? And right. And he also did the Big Lebowski and, you know, everything else.
Skyfall.
Yep, he did Skyfall, which is, you know, one of the best looking digital movies I've ever seen. And, you know, this movie looks fantastic. It's so beautiful, and the performances I think are great too, especially Emily Blunt. Like, she just kicks so much ass in this movie. It's amazing.
It's amazing that she's such a badass in this movie, even though every attempt that she makes to change the situation, there's like a roadblock. Like she is not the change that she wants to be. Like, everything is impeding her, but she's still so she still stands up and takes it. So yeah, I love her performance in this, for sure.
Yeah, and what's one of the things which is really interesting about it to me, and I think which sort of like speaks to that you know, atmosphere and everything too, you know, I was reading an interview with Sheridan where he was talking about how when he first started writing this thing, like, what kind of inspired him to do it was to try to write a movie with absolutely no exposition. And, you know, when I saw that, you know, I started thinking back about Sicario, and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. You know, that's pretty much what that movie is. You're just kind of like thrown into this situation. You know, there's no explanation as to why, you know, they're taking down these people or who these people are or anything like that. They never like explain their actions at the end or anything. I mean, it really does kind of like lack any exposition. And I think that makes for like a really interesting style.
Yeah. It works for the story they tell, because we're basically Blunt's character throughout the whole thing, where we're just going along with the flow and things are just happening, and there's no real time to stop and explain what's happening. So yeah, that exposition comment really makes sense.
Yeah. So, okay, this movie, you know, a lot of people, like, even, you know, just when it, you know, first came out, there was talk about a sequel. And everyone's like, a sequel? Wait, how are you going to, you know, movies like this don't have sequels. And they're like, no, we totally want to do a sequel. It's not going to be like a traditional thing where it picks up where this one left off necessarily, but it's going to be about Benicio del Toro's character. You know, it's going to be basically like another act in this, you know, planned trilogy. And the name of that movie is called Soldado, and Sheridan is writing it. It's going to be directed by this guy, Stefano Salima, who has made a few smaller movies. I guess Gomorrah is probably the one that he's most well known for, which I haven't seen, but
I haven't seen that either.
Yeah, I've heard good things. But you know, that's kind of like an interesting thing to do. You know, I believe the third movie in the trilogy is going to be about Josh Brolin's character, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that.
Interesting.
But it would seem to make sense. But then, you know, you hear like, oh, Sheridan's got a new movie coming out. It's called Hell or High Water. And in the press sort of like leading up to this, you know, it was revealed, or maybe it was revealed a little bit before this, but it was revealed to me, you know, in the press leading up to Hell or High Water, that it's also the second film in a trilogy which begins with Sicario, but this one being a more thematic trilogy where it doesn't have anything to do with Sicario from a story standpoint, but the idea is that Sheridan wanted to look at what he calls the American frontier, but today, like in the present, you know, where are we at now? So, you know, Sicario is very much about the relationship between America and Mexico, and I guess it mainly takes place in Arizona. Hell or High Water is about Texas, and it's more about the internal workings of the country, you know, not necessarily our relationship with Mexico or the outside world in general. And this is a movie starring Chris Pine and Ben Foster and Jeff Bridges, where Chris Pine and Ben Foster are brothers who are robbing banks from a specific branch to get just enough money to pay off their mom's farm, which they believe has, well, I mean, I guess we won't say why, right?
Right.
They're trying to get just enough money to pay off their mom's farm. And the reasons behind that, I guess, will remain hidden until you see the movie. So yeah, what did you think about Hell or High Water?
I think you found the one person in the country who did not like this movie. Like,
because
like I was saying off mic, I just read a tweet that said Guillermo del Toro said, "Hey, watch Hell or High Water. It's like magnificent or something." But I didn't feel that way about Hell or High Water. The most interesting aspect of the film was my experience watching the film. Real quick, I'll say, I was at a Q&A with these actors and the director and the writer, Taylor Sheridan. They were in the building. I wasn't in the same room as them because there were two screenings of this film going on at the same time, and they were in the other screen. They were next door. So there was a live Q&A stream, so I could see them on screen, but there was a wall in between me and Chris Pine, so, and Jeff Bridges, for God's sakes.
We were so close.
Unfortunately, yeah, the movie doesn't work for me. Taylor Sheridan said in his Q&A that, you know, this is Texas to him. He grew up in Texas, and this is what he thinks of Texas. And I say to Taylor, no, I'm sorry. I'm from Texas. I wasn't born here, but I've spent the last 25 years in Texas. And I'll say, I don't want this to be the representation of Texas for me. It's too trite at times. It goes into parody at moments, especially towards the end. I don't want to ruin it, but there's a scene where there's a bank heist and not one guy pulls out a gun, like a customer there at the bank, but what, like 10 guys pull out their guns, their hidden carry-ons, and they just chase the bank robbers. It was too much for me, Mike. I mean, yeah, I'll pass off to you, but I'll say I'm not the biggest fan of this movie. I'll say the performances work. Yes, Jeff Bridges is the man, and Chris Pine, Ben Foster are pretty damn good in their roles, but I've seen this material done better. And I hate to make this comparison, like I would rather see The Town again, which deals with like the brother bank robber aspect of it a lot better. The previously mentioned No Country for Old Men deals with how Texans like really are and that laid back feel. I think that captures that a lot better than Hell or High Water. So yeah, that's how I feel about this movie.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, before I get into my thoughts, I guess I'm curious about the Texas thing, because I've seen a number of people online who are from Texas be like, this is it. They got it. This feels just like Texas. And I've personally never been to Texas, but I have seen Bernie. And And I know from that movie that there are a number of different parts of Texas which have their own very unique flavors and styles and whatnot. And I know that you're from Austin,
right?
Which, you know, is what, the little blue dot right in the middle of the state.
Yeah,
and this is more West Texas.
Yeah, I'll say, yeah, I'm not from West Texas, and I've been in Austin for about 5 years now. But I did grow up in the Gulf Coast, Texas, like near Galveston, and I was in San Antonio for a while. So maybe this, I don't know. Maybe this is West Texas 100%, but I don't know. Some of it just feels off to me. There's another scene where and Taylor says this actually happened to him when he was a kid. The restaurant scene where this woman takes Jeff Bridges and his deputy's order.
Yeah,
and it's long and it's kind of, what's the word? Like I said, kind of.
It's over the top.
It's over the top, yeah. I don't know how. I don't like it, Mike. But it's I guess here's what I thought about. I'm trying to really break down my thoughts on it. There's a way of doing it where it's loving, where you're kind of on the side of the laid-back Texan, you know, vibe.
Yeah.
I hate to bring up No Country, but this is what I was thinking of when I was watching the movie. It was No Country. Like, look at the scene where Brolin in No Country is like trying to get a hotel room, and the lady there at the counter is like, "You pick a room, and then I'll write it down, whatever, you know." You were like on her side in that scene, really, because Josh Brolin's like trying to understand, but she's like the know-it-all. Like, she's a character I can say, "Hey, you know, she's real, and I'm not like looking down at her." Okay, see, and then you go to Hell or High Water, and I think the characters in this are caricatures, and there are points where you're like, "Oh, they're to be made fun of." Okay, that's just how I feel.
That could be, you know. I mean, as someone who's, you know, not from Texas, I mean, like, I guess my sort of baseline for how I imagine Texas to be, and I could be completely off on this, you tell me, is the television show Friday Night Lights.
No, see, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, well, watch it. It's awesome. I don't know if it's a good representation of Texas. I'm told that it is, but regardless, it's an awesome show.
See,
which is, by the way, you know, created by Peter Berg, who was a producer on this one. Anyway.
Oh, see, interesting. Yeah. I will say, a few days after I saw Hell or High Water, I saw Peach Dragon, which took place in, like, a nameless, like, kind of laid-back kind of country town. And that felt more Texan to me than Hell or High Water, crazily enough. Yeah. I was like, Peach Dragon, like, the music and the people in it, the people inhabiting in it, I was like, hey, this world, it's nice, it's cozy. It feels, you know, like Texas to me. But Hell or High Water, I don't know. Maybe I need to see it again, because, like I said, I'm like the one person I know who does not like this movie. I was expecting the, you know, backlash on this, you know, critical negativity, but nope, it's gotten a lot of attention, and I don't like the ending either. I don't like the ending. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, I did like it quite a bit. You know, I'm maybe not as super crazy in love with it as everyone else is. You know, I mean, I'm definitely, like, I would say I like Sicario more than most people like Sicario. But with this one, you know, watching it, I'm like, this is good. This is good. You know, and I will say that, you know, after leaving the theater, like, this movie really did stick with me much longer than I expected it to, and much longer than movies which I usually consider to be at this level of quality stick with me. So, you know, I mean, that's probably speaking to its quality too, and I feel like I do need to see it again. I think Jeff Bridges is amazing in this movie, as he usually is, and I think there's some really interesting stuff going on with him and his deputy, because, like, the whole time his deputy, who's, I think he's like half Mexican and half Native American,
I
believe.
Yeah.
And Jeff Bridges is constantly, you know, sort of like jokingly, you know, making fun of him, you know, from like a racial, you know, standpoint and stuff like that. And it's weird because, you know, generally when you see things like that, they it kind of plays like, oh, you know, Jeff Bridges really loves this guy and he's just giving him a hard time. He's just, you know, busting his chops or whatever. And the other guy realizes that too and everything. But there's moments in this movie where, while that is generally how it plays, like, they'll cut to like a reaction shot, you know, looking at his deputy or whatever, and his deputy is just like, this guy just doesn't get it. Like, he does not understand that what he's saying is actually like really terrible and hurtful or whatever, you know. I don't know, it was just like an interesting thing which is just sort of played in looks on occasion. It was one little aspect which I thought was cool. But yeah, Bridges is awesome, as he always is. I mean, he is the dude, you know. I mean, his performance in The Big Lebowski is one of the best of all time, and you know, it's cool just to see him on screen chewing up scenery. And, you know, I think that one of the reasons why this movie is not as good as Sicario is because of the direction. You know, I mean, not that the direction in this movie is bad by any stretch of the imagination, but, like, Sicario is, like, next level, you know, especially with that Deakin cinematography. And it has such, like, a mastery of tone and stuff like that, whereas this, I think, is kind of all over the place at times. There's a lot of stuff in there. I mean, this is a much funnier movie, you know. There's a lot more humor in this, but sometimes I feel like it's misplaced. And I don't know, the audience that I saw it with was really weird too, because they were laughing at things where I'm like, no, just because he told a joke a minute ago doesn't mean that this is a joke too, you know.
Yeah,
but whatever. And speaking of jokes, I need to bring this up because this is the one thing that I could relate to. There's a scene in the movie where, okay, Ben Foster and Chris Pine are brothers who are robbing banks. And Ben Foster is very much sort of like the career criminal who's been in and out of jail his entire life. Whereas Chris Pine is like the straight-laced brother who is getting into this, you know, against his better judgment, I think, you know. And against a lot of people's sort of like perceptions of him. And there's a scene where Chris Pine goes into a gas station to buy some drinks, and he comes back out and he gives drink to Ben Foster. And Ben Foster's like, what is this? You got me a Mr. Pibb. I told you I wanted Dr. Pepper. And Chris Pine says they were all out of Dr. Pepper. And Ben Foster's like, I can't believe you got me a Mr. Pibb. Mr. Pibb is for assholes. And at first, I'm like, hey, because Mr. Pibb, for those people who don't know, is the nectar of the gods. And if you look around the room that I'm in right now, you will see a rather unhealthy amount of empty Pibb Zero cans, to be quite honest, as well as a full, untouched, unopened can of original Mr. Pibb, which doesn't exist anymore, which, by the way, I blame you personally for, Marcelo, because the test market that they used to decide whether or not they should switch from Mr. Pibb to Pibb Extra was Austin. And according to Austin, Pibb Extra is better than Mr. Pibb, which, you know, I've always wanted to go to Austin, but if that's how they think, I can't get behind that. But at first I thought, like, okay, this line of dialogue, you know, what the nerve, Taylor Sheridan, I can't believe I thought you were a good writer. How dare you say that Mr. Pibb is for assholes and Dr. Pepper is better? That's clearly the thinkings of a madman. And then I was like, oh, no, that shows that he's really a good writer, because, you know, every line of dialogue, even a dialogue about soda, is commenting on this character and how mentally unstable he is.
Well, Mike, now are you done with your perspective? Because I'd like to jump in, because I have a perspective.
Okay, I want to hear this.
So you just mentioned the one moment in the film that I felt was most real. Okay.
Okay.
Because here in Texas. And like I said, I mean, I've been in Austin for 5 years, but I have been other places in Texas. Dr. Pepper is the nectar of the gods here, okay? It's not Mr. Pibb, like you said. You know, maybe it is in Chicago, but here in Texas, I believe it's Dr. Pepper. Dr. Pepper is the king, okay? People inhale it. They're upset when you offer them Pibb instead. It just doesn't happen. It's Dr. Pepper all the way. And I had to grow up with not liking Dr. Pepper, and that was a traumatic experience because I don't like the taste of Dr. Pepper, and everybody around me thought I was insane. This is a true story. Like, my ex would drink Dr. Pepper daily, and I do not understand that mentality. But people here love it, and Pib, that just goes by the wayside when you talk about Pepper. Okay, Dr. Pepper is Texas.
Wow. See, you know, I mean, I come from, you know, the North, you know, Chicago, which is a very, you know, liberal area, you know, very much a blue state to Texas's red state. And there's definitely like a lot of things that I hear coming out of Texas where I'm like, you know, ideologically, I don't agree with that. But nothing that I've heard coming out of Texas has given me greater pause than to hear that people prefer Dr. Pepper over Mr. Pibb.
It is. It's true. It's true, Mike. It may have something to do with there being Dr. Pepper bottling plants down here. I just looked it up. There's one in Dallas and there's one in Houston. But people love their pepper. They drink it up, and it's a way of life.
Fair enough. All right. Well, okay. Let's just talk about it. So these two movies, they are, you know, similar in a lot of ways and different in a lot of ways. He calls this the first two films in his American Frontier trilogy. The third film is a movie called Wind River, which he's directing himself, and which is starring Jeremy Renner and Elizabeth Olsen, and it's going to take place on a Native American reservation in Wyoming. And he hasn't really said much about, you know, what that's about, but he said that people who see it, who, you know, are familiar with Sicario and Hell or High Water will totally understand how, you know, this is like the final piece of the trilogy. So absent of that, which, you know, the movie should be coming out next year, most likely. What do you think about Sicario and Hell or High Water as, you know, two pieces? Now, I will say that I read an interesting thing. I think it was on Collider, and I believe it was the person who was writing the article who was coming up with this interpretation. But he was saying that both of these movies are about borders, in a sense. You know, Sicario is about, you know, the physical border between, you know, Mexico and America, and, you know, the differences and the problems which it causes and everything, whereas Hell or High Water is about the border between, you know, the rich and the poor, and sort of like what happens when those two groups, you know, come at odds with each other, which I thought was kind of an interesting analysis. But what do you think about these two movies, regardless, as a pair, you know, Sicario and Hell or High Water?
As a pair, I mean, Mike, you should know I like pairs of movies. I like double features. So
yeah.
To be honest, just my immediate response is, you did a great job of explaining, you know, Taylor Sheridan's perceivement as this of Sicario and Hell or High Water as like two parts of a trilogy, and yeah, you did a great job of that. But I'll just say I still don't understand how these two are connected at all. I think it's like Sicario is like it's an amazing movie. Like I said, it builds this world with this atmosphere, and it's visually amazing. The performances are amazing. I go to Hell or High Water, and it's like a different universe. I wish like the look was similar. I mean, it's hard to get Deakins as a cinematographer, of course, but the setting, the characters, the characters in Hell or High Water are not as smart as vibrant as the characters in Sicario. Even with Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine, Ben Foster, they're still not on par with the characters in Sicario. And the look at the world of I guess of American Hell or High Water compared to the world in Sicario, I see how Hell or High Water is like a look at the banking system, the financial system in America, and how people struggle through that. But I don't see how that relates too much with Sicario. I don't know. I find the ties to be thin. I'll say that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that more than anything, like, you know, especially the fact that he's calling it like the American Frontier Trilogy, you know, I think, and that each of these three things are take place in like different states, essentially. You know, Sicario is, you know, Arizona, Hell or High Water is Texas, and then Wind River is going to be Wyoming. Just the idea that like this is the land that, you know, we tried to conquer, you know, back when we were forming the country, right?
Yeah.
And like this is, you know, people settled for a better life, and you know, in a lot of ways, you know, people, you know, would say that they got that. And now here we are, you know, like 100 years later or whatever, and what is that like now? And, you know, I think what we're seeing in this trilogy is, you know, what he's trying to say is like, it's, you know, we kind of messed it up, you know, whether it's with drugs or whether it's with, you know, banking or whatever, you know, what we were trying to accomplish, you know, over, you know, 100 years ago is gone now, you know. And I mean, like, we get, I think, a little taste of, you know, sort of the approach that he's going to take when talking about, you know, Native American life in America today, you know. And I think that that's probably going to be what Wind River is about, and I think it's going to, you know, really kind of hit the nail on the head.
Okay, you know, I'm actually thinking about it now. I think you may have convinced me, Mike, because now I remember how important land plays in both films. Mm-hmm. Like in Sicario first, where they're trying to cross the border, and how, you know, the location of a certain tunnel is like is important to the plot, and how there's eventual fight between like these drug dealers and the government, and in Hell or High Water there's a you know, like you were saying, the mentions of Native American heritage and how big of a racist Jeff Bridges is, and also the final fight, as I think not as as great as I had wished it would be, not the final scenes, but the final, you know, shootout. I think that plays well into the conquering of land. Like, so one character is sort of defending his land against these forces, and Jeff Bridges, no, I don't want to spoil it, you know, then things happen. but yeah, okay, maybe in that aspect I could see the connection, and yeah, and maybe by the third film it will all be made clear. So yeah, Mike, you've convinced me. I do see a connection now between these two films.
Cool. You know what I would say? You know, I mean, you're talking about possibly revisiting Hell or High Water now that everyone has gone crazy over it. And, you know, what I did before seeing it, I watched Sicario again, because I hadn't seen Sicario since it came out, and I'm like, oh, I need to watch that movie again. So let me watch Sicario, and then the next day I went to see Hell or High Water. If you're planning on seeing Hell or High Water again, which I would recommend, because, you know, why not? You get to go to the Draft House, you know. So I mean, I'd go to the Draft House to see anything, you know. So since you're theoretically going to do that again, why not just watch Sicario first? Because I mean, hey, any excuse to watch Sicario is a good one, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So check them out. Like, watch Sicario, then go back and see Hell or High Water, and see what you think.
I'll do that. Yeah. Or maybe I'll wait and see them both, and then watch the third film. Because does that have a release date yet?
It doesn't have a release date yet. They finished shooting it. They've finished a cut of the movie, but they still might change some things. You know, they might refine some things a bit. And so I imagine it'll be out relatively soon. You know, like within the year. So
yeah. So yeah, I'll do that. I'll rewatch both, and then I'll watch the third one, and then I'll see what I think.
Cool. Well, it's been fun talking about Sicario and Hell or High Water today, but that's not the only thing we're talking about here on Trek FM this week, so here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
I saw most of the original series with my grandfather between the age of like 2 and 5. So a lot of my early impressions are based on can a 2 or 5 year old basically sit through an episode and find something they like in it? Okay, Kirk is running around like a horse, which is kind of fun, I guess.
Standard orbit.
When it was asked of him if he would be in a role or would be willing to take a role at Captain Kirk, he has come to grips with the fact he is too old to do any of that stuff. And it just wouldn't work, which I thought was very telling. And a great joke about Leonard Nimoy. You know, it's one thing when you go back in time and you still find yourself being old. Oh, yeah. That means you're really old.
That was a good line.
That was a good line.
Meta Trex.
The only thing it was missing was a Geordi PowerPoint.
Yeah, about the closest thing we have to a Geordi PowerPoint in Star Trek Beyond, Mike, is Spock trying to point out the location of Uhura's radioactive tracking device necklace.
He gave her a radio tracking device necklace?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So discover these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. I want to give a big shout-out to our associate producers, Jeff Sutter and Chris Steftenagel. Thank you very much for your support, guys. If you want to be like Chris and Jeff, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. Hey, Marcelo, have you seen Star Trek Beyond?
Yes, I did. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I know, right? It's pretty cool. I went to the marathon of the three movies before it came out in IMAX, and they gave us these posters, like full size posters with this really cool art.
Oh, that's cool.
And we're having a contest right now where if you leave a review on iTunes, you'll be entered for a chance to win this poster. Now, it's limited to the U.S. I apologize to everyone in other parts of the world. Ooh. But, you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
Go to iTunes, leave a review. You have until August 31st to do so. And, we'll have the drawing and we'll announce the winner on our big special September 8th episode, which is coming up. That'll be our next thing. It's because we're skipping a week. All right. If you want to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at TrekFM or on Facebook at Facebook.com/TrekFM. Or you can talk to us in the Babel Conference, which is our listener forum on Facebook. Just go to the Babel Conference, you know, type that into the search field on Facebook. That's B-A-B-E-L. And you'll find us there. Okay, so now, Marcelo, in addition to the Talk Film Society, I mean, that's become like a network in and of itself. Like, how many shows have you got on there now?
Oh, man, I don't... You got me on the spot here. So I have the Talk Film Society podcast. I call that Talk Prime. It's kind of on a break right now. That's the one where I have several guests on for segments on, you know, particular episodes where, I mean, you were on, I mean, in the very early run, you came on and talked about The Nick and Soderbergh for an episode, and Ocean, yeah. I think you talk about Ocean's 12, and
always.
Jurassic Park. So, yeah, so that's a fun show. That's on hiatus. That'll be back in the fall. I also have Hey What You Watchin' with Matt Curione, where he and I bring a guest in, and we talk about the films we've watched in the last week. Very basic show. That's a show where, I mean, the premise of that is like what other podcasts do for the first 10 minutes of their podcast. But we do that for a whole episode. So I love doing that. That's weekly. I also have, oh God, there's so many, the Hamilton podcast with me and Paul Smith, where I recorded my first listen to Hamilton, and that was a miniseries that came out a few months ago. It's called The Podcast Where It Happens. Oh my gosh, what else do I have? Die Hard. See, and this is the one I'm currently producing and trying to release as soon as possible. Die Hard for the National Film Registry podcast. This is an important one. I don't want to go into the full story, but I'm trying to get Die Hard into the national film industry, and I have guests on in each episode where they discuss a film that's already in the registry and also Die Hard, and the entire premise is to talk about the registry, to talk about the importance of the registry, and to get people voting on Die Hard and other films that should be in the registry. And an important date I want to bring up is September 2nd. That's the deadline for anybody out there listening to send in their votes for the film registry. Films that are not in the registry include Wrath of Khan. I know. And The Thing and other classics. I mean, there's a whole list of films that aren't on the registry online at the registry's website. So go there. Go to dieHardNFR.com/vote to vote, to fill out that ballot and do it quickly. September 2nd, that's a deadline. And look for the episodes from Die Hard NFR to be online soon enough. Mike, you were on there. You talked about Die Hard and The Matrix. That was a great discussion. And yeah, we have people talking Alien, Willy Wonka, Bambi. We run the gamut on films that are in the registry, and there's Die Hard talk abound. So yeah, check that out, folks.
Yeah, man, Die Hard definitely deserves to be on the registry. So go vote. So and where can people find the Talk Film Society in general?
Oh yes, go to @TalkFilmSOC on Twitter. That's where you'll find everything. You'll find links on that page. We don't have the website up yet. I raised funds this summer to build a new website, and that'll be up in the next few weeks. But as of right now, go to on Twitter @TalkFilmSOC, and you'll find all the information.
All right, and what about you personally on Twitter? Where can people find you?
You can find me @MarcelloJPico for classy Jessica Chastain photos.
Excellent, excellent. And you can find me on Twitter @Mumbles3K, and you can also find me producing From There to Here right here on the network. So check that out. It's our daily rewatch where we look at 2 episodes of Star Trek a day for the entire year. Okay, well, that's pretty much it for this week. Thank you very much for joining me, Marcelo. It's been a pleasure, and we'll definitely have you back on when we're talking about Hannibal.
I'm totally in for you.
We are taking a week off next week, but the week after, we're going to have essentially 2 episodes in 2 days, because September 8th is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, so we're going to do a commentary Track Stars style recap of where we look at all of Brian Fuller's pilots. And then the very next day, Friday, will be our normal episode, where also, since we're in the 50th anniversary, you know, mood, we're going to be taking a look at some movies which were spawned from the writer of the very first episode of Star Trek to air, George Clayton Johnson, who wrote the original Ocean's 11. So we're going to be talking about the original Ocean's 11 as well as the new Ocean's trilogy directed by the good old Mr. Steven Soderbergh. So have a nice week off, and we'll see you back here in 13 days. Thank you.